Blog Talk Radio.
Nothing.
You have to start again.
So where is it? Where is it? Here. Right here.
And we are here this morning, another great morning, another day to make choices. That's why the student-to-teacher show, I believe, is so successful, is because people are tuning in because they want to make wise choices, and they realize, more and more people are realizing the responsibility we have to make those choices, that we are responsible for any choices that we have, that we make for this day. Now, this is what I mean when I say that. This is Dr. Denita Applewhite. Now, just stay with me for a minute. If you make a choice this morning that no matter what is going on in your life, your external physical life, and you make a choice this morning to say, whatever is going on, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to handle this. I'm going to adapt to this. I'm going to figure out how I can be part of the solution versus the problem. And you see, you're the only one who can really make that decision. So I'm hoping that you'll join us this morning because we've got a great show planned for you. We've got students coming on discussing the issues of how they are maintaining their mental health. That's a new one, maintaining their mental health, improving it day in and day out. And so that's what we'll be talking about today. We've got some positive feedback from students about what they've been doing in their recovery process from all kinds of things, from major depression to bipolar disorder to PTSD. Our veterans will be coming on towards the end of the show. We've got a special treat for you with women veterans coming on this morning. And so that's going to be really neat. But let me get into what I think that will help us to understand this subject and broaden our horizons about what physical health and mental health really mean. You see, at White Apple Institute, and that's the sponsor for the Student to Teacher Show, what we try to help students to do when we emotionally support them is to understand how critical it is to maintain your physical health while you're going through the process, through the crisis in your life, especially. And you're at that point where you're ready to break down and just quit school and quit life and quit kids and quit everything, all right? So we're trying to, before you get to that point, when you contact White Apple Institute, the staff will put you in touch with counselors, psychologists that will help you to get through the process. And I mean, and give you the emotional support you need. And there are stipend programs available to help out with some of the counseling expenses that go into that. So make sure you contact whiteappleinstitute.org and hit that donation button so that you can keep not only the student-to-teacher radio show going, but you can keep stipend fund going for our students. Well, let's get started here on why we're even talking about this today, because I think that I mentioned just a few moments ago that many people are not aware that physical health is very much related to mental health. And when we discuss ways to improve our physical health, most students, and I deal with a lot of athletes, especially at the community college level, we have a lot of athletes that come into our academic programs and don't want to really be in the academic part of it, but know they have to be there in order to maintain their scholarship. And they are healthy. They understand the physical health perspective of life, okay? However, the mental health seems to be at a disadvantage. And that's what I want to make sure that we make a really good bridge between the two. One of them is that when we deal with physical health, we talk about nutrition, we talk about diet, we talk about exercise, we even talk about the environment, around us and prevention methods, okay? Well, what our veterans and our students and teachers and employees are going to discuss today is ways to improve your mental health in the same way that you would improve your physical health. Now, that gets a little deep there because it's like, you know, well, what are you talking about, nutrition and diet and exercise? What does that have to do with mental health, okay? Well, there's a lot to be said about the importance of managing your mental and emotional health. And a lot of people like to separate that, and I think that it's because of the stereotypes out there and about mental illness, mental health as a whole, that lead us into using the word emotional health more comfortably than mental health. And so in doing that, we need to be aware that as we, I think I had the line open there. Please excuse that. I have the switchboard open there for some people. We get into a real quagmire about how do we feed the brain? How do we feed the brain? We feed the brain by nutrition. We feed the brain by eating the appropriate foods that will help us increase our intelligence. And, you know, I was looking for a diet, per se, of what kinds of foods would help our students and employees to perform better at school and work. And to tell you the truth, every single thing that I researched came right back to the same things that we eat to maintain our physical health, which is very interesting. You know, I mean, avoiding the westernized diet of high fats and sodium and high carbohydrates. I mean, lower all those things, eat healthy meals, and that feeds your brain. Very simple, right? Okay. And so that goes into how do you make up your diet. So you have to be, I believe, that you have to be committed to both balancing your physical and your mental health, okay? And by doing that, with nutrition and diet are the two ways that you can make sure that those two things are on the same path, if you know what I mean, okay? Now, exercising the brain is another issue I want you all to focus on, because as we bring on our special guests, Dr. Douglas Brown, E. Douglas Brown, he's a clinical psychologist, okay, and the brother is just wonderful. I just enjoy being friends with him for many years and respect his professionalism and his knowledge, and so we're bringing him on, and I know he can really come up with some things that we can do to exercise our brain as he focuses on how we can identify our true selves, and that's an exercise in itself. Okay, so you stay tuned because we'll be bringing him on in a minute. But the exercise, some of the exercise that you can do with your brain, many of our students are already doing it because, my goodness, I know you're studying, okay? And you're hitting those books and doing whatever you can to get through the next testing. However, make sure that you maintain the nutrition and the diet, okay? But exercising the brain with more than just school books, more than just the academic schedule will help too. How do you do that? Well, there's lots of brain quizzes, brain exercises out there. Plug it into the internet. You know how to do it, okay? And come up with some things that you can do. Scrabble games. What's the new one out there? Word Find or something. Words with Friends. There's different things that you can do that take you away from the academic toil of trying to learn things and the stress of that, and takes you into another realm of exercising your brain. And then I want to just hit on very quickly environment. Now, I talked about that with physical health, because with physical health, you do have to worry about environment. Where are you living? Are you living in an environment that is good for your body? Okay, and we know that, especially outside of the United States and westernized nations, many people do not live in very good environments, and it does affect the way that students learn. High lead levels, okay, even in the United States, and those kinds of things do affect the environment. So But there's more. There's something deeper I want to talk about. The environment of your immediate home. Check this out now. Your immediate home environment should be one that is conducive to a relaxed schedule, a relaxed environment. So we know that if you're in school and you're working, like most of the people that listen to this show, okay, and especially if you're dealing with any form of disability, okay, and turning that around to different, looking for your different abilities, but still there's the disability is there, okay, and you're trying to manage all of that, your environment is going to become very stressful. However, there has to be something in your environment that kind of eases it out, eases the pain, eases the stress, okay? Because we have to remember that we come into this life looking for ease. Now, some of you I know are taking down some notes, so just write that word down, E-A-S-E, ease. We are always looking for ease. And so what we do many times is we look at different remedies and sometimes drugs, alcohol, to soothe us, to bring us back to a state of ease, okay? So when you're not at a state of ease, what are you at, my friends? You're at dis-ease, disease. And so these are the things that lead to different things going off-centered in your body, which then, of course, impact the way we perform at work and school. Okay. Lately, I have a student that just recently wrote in. She has bipolar disorder, and she has found that just lowering her amounts of carbohydrates and sugars has helped her to control her manic episodes. But most importantly, she said, was the factor that she's taking bubble baths. And I thought that that was very interesting, that she has changed her environment around and her schedule around, that she makes room to take a bubble bath now, okay? And that's what I mean when I talk about environment, doing things within your environment that can move you away from all of the stress, okay? Now, and the last thing I want to talk about is prevention. So I've talked to you about nutrition, diet, exercising the brain, the environment that you create, okay, and prevention. Now, prevention, I'm going to talk about prevention in relationship to environment for a minute, because I'm going to talk about your friends. Yes, your environment encompasses your friends and your family. So when you talk about your environment and preventing things that will impact your mental and emotional health, you need to definitely think about how you can prevent people from coming in your life that move your energy in a direction where you feel dis-ease, okay? So that's another thing that we need to work on, is the prevention of things in our environment, okay? I mean, the first thing, very, very first thing is, do you even want to do this? Do you even want to improve your mental health? Do you want to maintain it? Do you want to perform well at school and work, okay? So if you have already made up your mind that you want to do that, then I advise you, strongly advise you, to listen to these things that we're saying today. And also, I can't resist looking at what the National Institute of Health and even the WebMD, these are all things that come out, research that comes out to help us understand more about mental health and mental illness and how those things can disrupt our lives. But I really encourage you to look at WebMD, to look at the NAMI especially. We are very, very supportive of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, okay? So if you go into NAMI.org, you'll find lots of information out there. And, of course, our veterans have tremendous access to that. As a veteran, I have definitely personally taken advantage of the crisis hotline at the VA hospital. And I'm telling you, it is just a wonderful process, very, very supportive individuals that will help you get through. We have a young man also coming on today in our vet-to-vet discussions. We expect a young man, Sergeant Dunson, to come on and talk about his journey through PTSD. So we've got a great show coming up here. And I believe Dr. Douglas Brown is on the line, and we're going to pull him in here and start some stuff, okay? All right, here we are, Dr. Brown. Is that you out there?
Start some stuff. Yes, it is.
Start some stuff.
Yes, it is. I'm ready to go. Just start some stuff.
There you go.
I was listening to you discuss the significance and importance of nutrition, environment, and diet. And as I was thinking, I was saying that possibly one of the things that will be most helpful is to point out exactly what is nutritious, and what is a good environment and a good diet for the true self. Now, with this respect, in terms of tagging on your comments about mental illness and emotional dysregulation, we want to obviously bear in mind that there are forms of mental illness and emotional dysregulation, as you stated, that are caused by organic or medical factors. They're caused by physical illness.
Mm-hmm.
Physical illness is what gives rise to what we call emotional and mental illness.
Yes.
And that's, again, one of the reasons why it is very important to do what we can to try to eat nutritious food, to maintain a diet, try to make sure that we can place ourselves in a healthy environment that's conducive to growth, that conducive to relaxation and calm. Yet, all this being said, we know that we only have a certain degree of control. One of the things that is very important with respect to mental health, or I like to say psycho-spiritual health.
I like that.
Psycho-spiritual health. And the reason why I'm using that term is because the word psyche actually means spirit. It means spirit when you go to the Greek root of the word.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the origins of, say, to so to speak, mental illness, the study of mental functions has to do a lot with what's in our mind, what
mm-hmm.
we call the mind. And the mind is not equal to or synonymous with the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The brain essentially is the computer. It's a mega computer.
Yeah.
Processing information, not only sending signals and information and sending directives regarding to different parts of our body, but also receiving possibly millions of bits of information
mm-hmm.
from our environment. But the
right.
mind is part of our consciousness. The mind, so to speak, is a non-physical canvas, if you will,
mm-hmm.
in which our thoughts are brought to our awareness. Now, one of the reasons why this distinction is important is because the true self actually eclipses or is beyond our body self. Now, I'm not trying to here go off in an ethereal way, you know,
mm-hmm.
wanting to be very practical and functional, but I'm saying the self that wants to be at ease, the self that wants to attain happiness and calm, that self, in a literal way, that self is not the brain. Now,
mm-hmm.
to give you an illustration of what I'm saying, and I do wholeheartedly request you to, you know, for us to exchange is that, let me ask you, can the brain love? Can the brain love? Can it love and hate?
Mm-hmm. I have students asking that question, too. And
brain,
of course, yes.
Tell me, go on, I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, of course, I you know, from a clinical perspective, academic perspective, I lead them into, you know, all the things that go on with the hypothalamus and the different parts of the brain. And, you know, that's helpful in one way. But the stuff that you talk about, Dr. Brown, is beyond that beyond just the organ of the brain itself, the mechanics of the brain. You're talking about students getting in touch with something that's beyond the physical.
Yes.
It's non-physical.
Beyond, yes, yes. Because as we know, the brain cannot love and help and hate.
Right.
The brain cannot ponder or reflect on reality. The
mm-hmm.
brain cannot see itself. In other words, when I think about myself in comparison to others, or I'm reflecting on something, that's me doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, in our language, and this is true universally, when I speak about the brain, the one that I have,
yes,
I say my brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I speak about the mind that I have, I say my mind.
Yes.
That gives us clues that there is an entity that possesses that brain and that mind.
Yes.
Or that entity, if you will, that possesses the mind and that brain is me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the true self. That is the real me that has a mind and has a physical counterpart to my mind, which is my brain.
Right.
Now is that we got that, right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So the nutrition, the diet that is very important for myself, my true self, is learning to know the difference between my true self and what I believe to be myself, what I think is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, individuals, and yours truly is included, for the majority of our lives, the sense of self that we have, the person that we think we are, that is learned. That is learned.
Absolutely.
In its condition. You see, you know, I'm given a name at birth. I'm brought up by parents or guardians. I'm brought up in some type of unit, some kind of situation. And I take on the cultural values and behaviors, expectations. I basically, what? I'm taught the psychology or the mind, the mind flows, the mind rivers, so to speak, of those who live around me. With respect to the true self, you see, the true self exists or is present before I am named Jane or before I'm named Johnny. And that's a realization that may be hard to put a hand on or to accept, but there is a me before I am named. There is a me. Now, why is that important? Why is it important to be able to recognize that or realize that? Well, maybe
okay, say that last part again, Dr. Brown, that last part
okay,
about
why is it important for me to realize that, understand that there is a me before I'm named?
Mm-hmm.
And that me is not exclusive to my brain.
Mm-hmm.
That me is not exclusive to the brain I have. See?
Well, let me ask you something, and I don't mean to interrupt your point, but I just...
No, I want you to interrupt. I've got
a chat coming in here that has a very, very good question. And one of them is that when you're hungry and you're feeling hurt and you're trying to go to work and you're trying to go to school... you know, she says, what are you talking about, the true self? I'm still hungry, and I'm still hurt.
All right.
And that's just what she's saying.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah. See, the me, the real me, the person that I really am, could not exist in this world without a body.
Yes.
Without a physical body and a brain. And our physical senses, the hardware, the nervous system, everything we need to live, so to speak, our life in this world. And the self or as I experience hunger, thirst, certain types of physical urges and needs, these are primarily feelings and things, these are primarily urges that sustain my body. And
mm-hmm.
they sustain me, the me that I think I am. So I have to have this sense of hunger. Right? In other words, when I become hungry, I have to feel hungry. So that, what do? I tell my body goes to go get something to eat. Because
right.
that sensation of hunger in itself, the body cannot go and satisfy that sensation that it needs food. It needs
now
food.
That is very, very clear. That makes sense because it's a machine. She needs to understand the machine is hungry. The machine is the body, okay?
The machine is the body. And I'm hungry, too, because when you show me that double-decker hamburger and cheese, and I say, wow, and you show me that cheese and mustard, and you show me the potato chips and the soda, I like that.
Especially when you're hungry. And you don't think
That's
about
right.
the
I like it. I'm not thinking about the fat and all of the bad. Maybe it's not pretty good diet-wise. But I experience that yearning. I want that. I want it, right?
Right, right.
So I go and eat. Now, the question is, or let's say the challenge is while I'm hungry and it tastes good, I'm savoring this in my mouth, my brain is processing this in terms of, you know, the senses, is that's actually not the real me. And I'm not trying to take us in a direction that's confusing. Because
uh-huh.
by the same token, when you put that cheeseburger in front of me, that double-decker cheeseburger in front of me on the table, I can refuse to eat it. That's called fasting.
Mm-hmm.
When an individual